Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to another IMF podcast. In this episode, the benefits and challenges of taxing carbon.
Impacts on competitiveness are a major obstacle to carbon pricing, and it's usually something that has to be taken into account in the strategy. But we also emphasize that there are domestic environmental benefits from carbon pricing, particularly in countries with severe local air pollution problems. Well, I'm Ian Parry, and I specialise in climate change and environmental and energy tax issues.
When it comes to environmental policies, Ian Parry argues none are more effective than carbon taxes. Parry, an expert on fiscal policy and climate change at the IMF, says carbon taxes promote a full range of responses for reducing emissions, like switching from coal to clean generation fuels, reducing the demand for electricity, transportation fuels, and so on, and can be fairly easy to implement. Parry is author of several research papers on carbon taxation, and his recent article on the topic is published in the June 2019 edition of Finance and Development magazine. So how do carbon pricing schemes work, and how many countries are actively using them?
Well, there are over 50 examples of carbon pricing schemes at the moment. The national level, the regional level, and the subnational level. So that includes both carbon taxes and emissions trading systems. So carbon taxes are essentially just charges on the carbon content of fossil fuel supply. Mm-hmm. They can build off existing fuel tax systems or maybe royalty regimes for extractive industries. Emissions trading systems are usually implemented further downstream in the fossil fuel supply chain on power generators and large industrial firms, and entities under these schemes have to surrender an allowance for each ton of their emissions, and then the government controls the supply of emissions, and then market trading of emissions allowances determines the price.
Oh, so is there an entity out there that determines what the price of carbon should be, and do we know at what price point that we should see a significant decrease in the use of fossil fuels?
Yeah, so, I mean, under carbon taxes, the finance ministry will set the tax rate schedule. And then as the tax is passed forward in higher prices for fossil fuels and electricity and so on, that's going to promote reductions in energy use and shifting towards cleaner fuels across the economy. Under a trading system, the price is determined in the market, so the government can try and align the supply of allowances such that that's in line with the mitigation pledges that each country has made for the Paris Agreement.
I see. So with the fuel providers paying more taxes, aren't we likely to see in some countries, you know, significant increases in the price of coal, for example? And I'm thinking South Africa and China, where people still depend on coal. How do we avoid the scenario where consumers are left carrying the burden of carbon pricing?
Yeah, no, that's a big issue. That the point is to reflect the costs of the carbon emissions in the prices of fossil fuels and the energy that's produced from fossil fuels, because that's going to promote all of the potential behavioral responses across the economy for reducing fuel use and emissions. And for the most part, the carbon charges will be passed forward into higher prices for consumers, higher prices they pay for on their electricity bills, higher prices they pay at the pump. Mm. In particular, there's a big impact on coal prices because coal has a very high carbon intensity.
Right.
But coal is generally used in production of electricity or in industry. It's rarely consumed directly by households. So even though there's a big increase in the price of coal, it's the price of electricity which matters, which doesn't increase to such a dramatic extent. But you know, this creates a political difficulty. Clearly, higher energy prices can be very challenging. So we have to think of strategies to try and enhance the acceptability of carbon pricing, or alternatively, you use policies which promote a lot of the same behavioral responses as carbon pricing does, but avoiding a bigger increase in energy prices. Mm.
So where do low-income countries fit into the carbon pricing scheme? I mean, how difficult might it be to implement a carbon tax system in countries where the economy is mostly informal?
Well, actually, I think the fiscal rationale for carbon taxes is especially strong in developing countries, actually, in the sense that many of them can't raise adequate revenues from the broader fiscal system due to such a high concentration of economic activity in the informal sector.
I see.
Whereas a tax on fossil fuels is a relatively straightforward tax to collect and administer. So actually the rationale on revenue grounds for including a carbon tax in the tax system is actually quite strong in developing countries, whereas trading systems may be a lot more problematic to implement for these countries on administrative grounds, because new capacity is required to monitor emissions from power generators and industry and to monitor trading markets. And perhaps there isn't just sufficient liquidity to establish a smoother trading market.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier the political aspect of all this. How do you get, I mean, because we're talking about imposing or introducing new taxes on corporations that essentially will likely turn into higher prices for consumers. How do you get national governments to buy into carbon pricing when there may well be a political price to pay for doing that?
Yeah, I mean, well, we know it's politically difficult because even though there are many pricing schemes that have been implemented or scheduled for implementation, it's still the case that when you average across all of the emissions worldwide, the economy-wide carbon price is not very large. It's only about $2 per ton, whereas we really need to scale it up quite dramatically to $50 per ton or more at the global level. And we're seeing in France and Canada, for example, push back on fairly aggressive carbon pricing schemes. Mm. So it's difficult. And it's difficult to judge in advance what the opposition to a carbon pricing scheme might be. But there are some strategies for at least increasing the likelihood that the carbon tax will be successfully implemented and sustained. We generally recommend that the price is phased in gradually over time and well announced, so households and firms have time to adjust. We'd recommend there's extensive consultation with stakeholders ahead of time to try and get them on board, and an extensive communications program to inform the public about the rationale for the reform is important. It's important to provide assistance for vulnerable households, like protect low-income households, so provide assisting measures for them. Important to assist the transitions for firms, the relocation of resources away from energy-intensive industries to other industries, and to help the displaced workers. And in addition, carbon pricing can raise significant amounts of revenue. So using that revenue in a visible way, in a way that's viewed as equitable, and in a way that benefits the economy, can also help enhance the acceptability of the strategy. For example, in developing countries, maybe using it to fund productive investments that are required to meet sustainable development goals. Maybe in some advanced countries, using some of the revenue to cut people's payroll taxes or personal income taxes.
Hmm. And so how do you move mitigation policy forward at an international level? At this point, can corporations simply move to another jurisdiction to avoid a carbon tax? I mean, how legally binding are agreements like the Paris Agreement?
Well, the Paris Agreement's not legally binding, and it's not really practical for an international agreement which is signed by 195 parties to be legally binding. So it is based on a voluntary approach where countries pledge what they think they can achieve. But impacts on competitiveness are a major obstacle to carbon pricing, and it's usually something that has to be taken into account in the strategy. But it's mostly just a handful of vulnerable firms that are both energy intensive and trade exposed. So steel, aluminium, glass, cement, refineries and so on. So it's a handful of industries. The huge bulk of the emissions are coming out of, say, the power sector or the transport sector or homes, and those aren't internationally mobile. It's just a handful of key industries which potentially could move, although studies suggest that the amount of emissions leakage due to firms moving outside the region with pricing is going to be fairly limited, fairly modest. But nonetheless, it is a big political issue. And so typically as part of a carbon pricing strategy, some measures will be included to assist the transitions or maybe provide some sort of a rebate or perhaps some transitory exemption for these vulnerable industries. But we also emphasize that there are domestic environmental benefits from carbon pricing, particularly in countries with severe local air pollution problems like China and India and Russia. So to the extent that they do move ahead with policies to cut back on fossil fuels, up to a point it can be in their own interests, because this helps to reduce local air pollution mortality. So we emphasize that, you know, this is an important message that you know, it's in your own interest up to a point to move ahead with carbon mitigation because of the domestic health benefits.
And so what do you think in the end is the role of the international institutions like the fund for helping countries implement mitigation policy?
Well, on one level is to provide guidance on the specific design of policies to help countries make headway on their mitigation pledges. Essentially, the entire IMF membership has made pledges to mitigate their emissions. And so we provide quantitative analyses on a country-by-country basis of projections of emissions from fossil fuels and assessments of how carbon taxes or other instruments might affect fuel use and hence emissions, and then the broader fiscal and economic impacts of mitigation measures. So we provide sort of like a toolkit for helping policymakers understand what sorts of carbon prices they would need to phase in if they wanted to rely exclusively on carbon pricing to meet their mitigation pledges, and also the information they need to gauge the trade-offs between carbon pricing and other instruments which might be politically a little bit easier to introduce, but are less effective than carbon taxes. So, you know, policymakers can think about, well, maybe we'll need a combination of measures. We'll price carbon as much as we can within political feasibility and then reinforce it with some other measures.
Mm. And so are you encouraged by what you've seen perhaps in the past couple of years? Do you see things moving in the right direction?
Well, certainly in terms of international dialogue, it's very promising with all countries essentially making mitigation pledges. And there is a general sense, I think, amongst the international community that, you know, time's running out. The window of opportunity for containing warming to manageable levels is closing rapidly. And so there's an awful lot of international dialogue about how we can move policy forward. For example, recently there was a coalition of finance ministers launched, the Finance Ministers Coalition for Climate Action. And 28 countries have now joined this coalition. And, you know, the aim is to discuss how they can scale up their own mitigation activities and how to learn from each other. So there's certainly a lot of dialogue. But at the global level, even if countries were to implement the pledges that they've made, the emissions reductions would only be about a third of those that would be consistent with containing warming to 2 degrees Celsius, which is actually the upper bound target of the Paris Agreement. And I think that countries acting unilaterally only have limited incentives to scale up their pledges relative to other countries. So at the IMF, we suggest that policymakers consider the idea of a voluntary carbon price floor arrangement amongst the large emitting countries as a complement to the Paris process, to reinforce the Paris process. This would provide assurances against losses in competitiveness, It could be equitable if advanced countries were subject to a higher floor price requirement than developing countries. And under the Paris Agreement, advanced countries have greater responsibilities for cutting their emissions. And it could be effective, what we think are feasible carbon prices, a floor for advanced countries of, say, $50 per tonne by 2030 and $25 per tonne for developing countries. We think those sorts of carbon prices should be entirely feasible. That would roughly double the amount of emissions mitigation over and above that implied by current mitigation pledges. So we think that's an arrangement that policymakers should be thinking about.
Thank you so much.
Sure, you're welcome.
Ian Parry is the principal environmental fiscal policy expert in the IMF's Fiscal Affairs Department and author of What is Carbon Taxation, published in the June 2019 edition of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND to find the magazine online or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.